Hi there. How you doing? I'm Dr. Rita Marie Lascalzo, and I'm excited to be here tonight to share with you some very special information that I've been really spending a lot of time learning about, and I just got back from a two-day whirlwind presentation that was extremely, extremely valuable, and I just wanted to share some highlights with you. It's a topic that I've been looking into for several years, the whole topic of methylation and nutrigenomics and how that affects your hormones. So I'm excited to share some things, some highlights from the presentation, and also to get you aware that as you're working with your clients and you're starting to maybe hit a wall when you've done the basics and the basics aren't quite working, that there are other things that you can be looking at. And it really helps us to do this kind of testing on yourself so you have an understanding of where you're coming from. So this is my very first time doing a Google Hangout like this. So if there's a few hiccups along the way, I'm sure that we'll figure it out. Usually when I do a Google Hangout, it's in my kitchen and I have a team of people helping me out. So now I'm in my office just presenting to you. So a few things. I know that you're all either practitioners in some form of another, or you are looking to be a practitioner, or you just want to really help your family to get better, or yourself, and you're looking for ways to go deeper. And some of the stuff I'm going to be sharing with you helps you to go deeper with your clients. Again, I cannot share everything I learned, but I picked out some of the highlights that I think are clinically relevant and that I really want you to get an understanding of what really methylation is and nutrigenomics and how that fits in with you helping to solve your problems with your clients, in particular when it comes to hormones, or what I like to refer to as nutritional endocrinology, the study of how hormones are affected by nutrition. So let's just dive in, and I'm going to hit a button and you should now see my slides. All right, you see my slides, yay. So I'm just going to go on through the slide presentation, nutrigenomics, methylation, hormones, and nutrigenomics. And we're going to start with really giving you an explanation of what those terms really mean and why it's important for you to learn about these things so that you can better serve your clients. Just as a start, I want to make sure that you understand and that when you're presenting to your patients, you clearly state this, or your clients, especially if you're teaching in group settings, that the information I'm presenting, don't let it replace the one-on-one relationship with the qualified medical professional. It's not medical advice. It's just my knowledge to you, and I just want to impart that. It's all about education, educating you to be able to educate your clients and educate them so that they can make really good choices that help them to increase their energy and feel better and better. So that's my, you know, kind of blanket disclaimer. So you're in the practice of, or you're getting into the business of, helping people with their health, and they're coming to you because they have issues, and what they're doing isn't working for them. They have some sort of health challenges, or they're overweight, or in some cases it might be that they have a family history of certain things that they just want to overcome. So they've come to you for help. They've heard you're the hottest nutritionist in town, or the hottest ND in town, or something along those lines, and they're ready to fly. They want to hear what you have to say. But generally, by the time they come, they have complex health challenges. Some of them just come with real easy stuff, and, you know, it's the truck driver, and he's driving across country, and he's eating and stopping at all the fast food places and smoking cigarettes and drinking beer. Those are actually the not-so-complex cases, because my experience is that most of those people get phenomenal results at the beginning. May not completely clean up their health problems if they've had things for a long time, but you see tremendous improvement in just a little while. And some of them are not like that. Some of them come to you and say, look, I'm drinking 3 green smoothies a day. I exercise. I meditate. I don't know what's wrong with me, because I still have low energy, or I still have PMS, or I still have digestive issues. Can you help? And typically these sorts of cases are going to have you just sweating in your britches, right? Like, how can I help? What can I do? They're doing the things that I know how to do. And while those basics are important, that's the starting point, there are other things that you can do, and I want to share some of those. What I'm going to be sharing is the concept of functional medicine or functional nutrition. That's not the this drug for this symptom mentality. It's also not the this supplement or this herb or this exercise to fix this problem. It's a multifactorial approach, and it goes on the premise of when we get ill, when the body starts to malfunction, it's as a result of things being out of balance. And your job as a holistic health practitioner is to be truly holistic about it, not to just say, well, I have this one modality that I can apply. And if you do have one modality and that's what you specialize in, say you're an energy worker and you like to do this, you know, kind of laying of the hands type of work, but you're recognizing that there's some other issues going on that this person might need to have some diet advice and may need to have some herbs and their adrenals might be shot and it's a little bit beyond energy work, that you could work in conjunction with other practitioners. So we want to provide the experience to the patient or client of it being truly holistic. And it's dealing with things from a functional perspective. So it's looking at how's the body functioning and what does how it's functioning tell you about how it's malfunctioning and what kind of things you can do to intervene. It's a wonderful process. I've been doing it for over 22 years now, and it's what juices me. I just love digging in and helping people solve their health issues. So as I said, we mentioned three different things in the title of this presentation, methylation, nutrigenomics, and hormones. And I'm going to start with what are hormones. And many of you already know what hormones are. Most people think they know what hormones are, but I just want to make sure that I'm offering you exactly what the hormones are. One, they're the messengers of life. They basically carry signals from one part of your body to another. They're secreted by glands, and they have a message. And that message is to take it from one part to the other to tell that other part what to do. So they basically control the physiologic and behavioral activities, such as digestion, metabolism, growth, reproduction, mood. And when the gland secretes a hormone, it kind of travels in the bloodstream and gets to the end target, and there's receptors on that organ. There's receptors in the cells that say, oh, I know you, I want you. So it might be a receptor for thyroid hormone. It might be a receptor for an adrenal hormone. But the point of the matter is, hormones are not just about mood swings at menopause, and it's not just about PMS or even PCOS. Hormone imbalance is about everything that you're doing in your day-to-day life. So we just talked about what exactly are hormones. Most of you know what they are, but I just want you to be aware that hormones are controlling everything. It's not just the reproductive system. There's hormones in your digestive tract, in your lungs. They control your metabolism, your growth, everything. So next, this is just an overview. For those of you who have been on some of my previous practitioner webinars that I've had, then you'll see that this is just a review. So go ahead and just take a glance. The main endocrine glands for you are the pituitary, the pineal, the thyroid, the thymus, the adrenal, the pancreas, the ovary, and the testes. But there's so many more. There's glands that secrete hormones in your heart, in your kidneys. There's glands that control your kidneys. So there's a lot of hormones. And we're not going to spend a lot of time going in depth on hormones. What we're going to do is give you the overview and then make the connection with methylation and nutrigenomics and just give you one more tool that you can use to help folks. So, nutritional endocrinology, the relationship between nutrition and endocrine imbalances. Those of you, again, have been on some of my previous webinars or were attending SHINE, you know that connection. And nutrition is so important in controlling your endocrine imbalances. It's also super important in controlling these methylation things and overcoming and what I like to call outsmarting your genes. And this is good stuff to know. So nutrient imbalances like excesses or deficiencies, not just deficiencies, but excesses impact your hormones. And as we'll see later, they also impact your genetic expressions and what's called the nutrigenomics. And then the understanding the relationship between food and hormones. And as I usually say, I don't like to jump right into, like people go to bioidentical hormones as soon as they think that they have a hormone imbalance. And yes, if something is really, really severe, we'll go there right away. But we have to be also working on food. And there are some herbs, and there are some isolated nutrients. And all of these work in concert. And you're going to see the connection shortly on how that works with your genetics and methylation. So just a little overview, and if some of you have seen this before, some of you haven't, but estrogen metabolism is so controlled by food and nutrients. And it's also, as we'll see later, controlled by genes. Like certain genes affect this pathway that you're seeing on the screen. And so you'll see that there's a precursor, which is androstenedione, and that gets converted to estrone, which is E1, then estradiol, which is E2, and now the bottom estriol. But when the estrogens are secreted, they do their thing and they do what they're supposed to do, and you basically need to get rid of them. They need to be converted to downstream metabolites. They can be converted to one called 4-hydroxyestrone, and you push that pathway when you're low in magnesium. So it makes it really important as you're chatting with your clients and patients that you make sure that their magnesium status is good, that they've got lots of leafy greens, and a lot of them do need a magnesium supplement. And we'll see, you know, in some of the genetic places why that's so. So the 4-hydroxy is not the one we want to go towards. It's the dangerous one that predisposes to breast cancer. So what we want to do is make sure that people are just having plenty of magnesium. On the other side, estrone gets converted to estradiol, which is E2 and has its own functions. And in getting rid of it, it goes down a pathway towards 16-hydroxyestrone, which is a dangerous metabolite as well as 4. Not quite as dangerous as 4. 4 seems to be the most potent one that causes proliferation, particularly of breast tissue, but other hormone-sensitive tissue. And if somebody's obese, if they've got a thyroid problem, if they're exposed to pesticides, if they're on medications like for ulcers or for stomach acid, they are going to have problems with going too much towards estrone. And then if they don't have enough iodine, they're not going to convert that 16-hydroxy into estriol, which is the protective estrogen. So you can see how nutrition plays a big role. And then the 2-hydroxy, which converts to the 2-methoxy, which is a methylated form of estrone. And we're going to talk more about methylation. So we have a basic working knowledge of what methylation is and some of the nutrients that help to push it away from the 16 and the 4 and down towards the 2 are things like DIM, which is diindolmethane, and indole-3-carbinol, which are extracts from cruciferous vegetables, as well as exercise. Flax, soy, they have isoflavones, fatty acids, and progesterone. So a lot of people have an imbalance between estrogen and progesterone. And you'll find that a lot of your clients may come to you and say, well, I tried progesterone cream, and I sure did get a good result. It's because we reverted that. So let's move into the genetics piece. So we talked about the hormone piece. So we have a basic working knowledge as I go through this. And the SNPs, they're called single nucleotide polymorphisms. And if we go back to genes, basically you've got your genes and your DNA strands in every cell of the body. If you don't remember all that, that's basic genetics. You can look that up. But there's this double helix strand of DNA. There are base, there are pairs. There's specific nucleotides which make up your DNA. And the genes, whichever ones they are, whichever nucleotides they are, code for creating certain proteins in the cell. So that helps with the structure of the cell. That helps in eye cells to express eyes and not hair, because every cell in your body has all the DNA, right? 23 pairs of chromosomes, so 46 chromosomes. So when basically have a gene turned on in a certain part of the body, then it expresses. So just because you have a specific gene doesn't mean that gene is necessarily turned on in that cell. So that's an important piece. So SNPs are base pair variations. They're basically abnormalities. I don't like to call them defects or mutations. A lot of people use that terminology, so you may hear that. Oh, a genetic mutation. Because some of them are actually protective. Some of our SNPs, single nucleotide polymorphisms, are so it's basically a single variation in that, like a T, a thymine, instead of a guanine, a G. And there's 4 bases that are used in DNA. Most of these SNPs, like 90-some percent of these, they've not been able to observe any differences that happen. Many of them lead to normal variations. So your eye pairs will look different than mine if your eyes are blue and my eyes are brown. So your hair is curly, my hair is straight. So many of them lead to normal variations. But others can lead to disease or nutrient imbalances because of the way they slow down or change or speed up some of the enzyme mechanisms in your body. So what's nutrigenomics? Well, nutrigenomics is the study of the effects of foods and nutrients on how those genes express. So you may have heard the term epigenetics, and epigenetics talks about the environmental and dietary effects on a gene and whether it expresses or not. So if you have a gene that predisposes you to a particular disease, but you've not had the lifestyle that's turned that gene on, or you've had plenty of methyl groups that have kept it turned off, then you're in good shape. But if you turn that gene on, that's when it expresses. So a lot of the fear that goes on about genes, and you know, Angelina Jolie having her breasts removed because she had a gene that predisposed her for cancer, doesn't mean she's going to get cancer. What she should have been counseled on was not to have radical mastectomy, but to have some counseling to talk about how the food and the lifestyle and her thoughts and her movement and her nutrient status could be affected to prevent her from getting that cancer. Of course, there's no guarantees, and plenty of people who don't have that gene do get breast cancer because it's a multifactorial thing and genes are just part of it. So when folks say, oh, I'm doomed to get that because it's in my genes, that's not true. You're not doomed to get it because it's in your genes. You have the responsibility to be doing things in your life that don't cause those bad genes to get expressed. And then there's the influence of the genetic variation on nutrition. So you may have a gene that makes you need more folate than another person, or more B6 or B12 or magnesium or any of a number of other nutrients that you may need more of or less of. Like more is not necessarily better. You may need less of a certain nutrient and more of a certain food than your counterpart, you know, a brother or sister or friend, because of your genes. But it doesn't mean that your genes are you necessarily, because of course, right, your skin cells do not express the eye genes, yet they're in there. The DNA to make a skin cell is in the eye cells, and in this DNA to make eye cells is in the skin cells. But we're not walking around with eyes on our skin and skin in our eyes. Why? Because the message is being sent out. Now, there are things that mutate that, like exposure to radiation, that can actually damage the DNA in such a way that, you know, successive generations grow things that are weird, like, you know, multiple eyes and extra fingers and missing limbs, and there's all sorts of things like that. And then the correlation between these SNPs, these single nucleotide polymorphisms, single changes in that genetic code, the nucleotides that are being changed, and a nutrient's absorption, metabolism, elimination, or biological effects. So all of these things, and we're going to do a broad overview to give you a good idea of what's going on in there. And if this is something you want to study more deeply, there's a number of ways that you can do that. Experts say that 5% of genetic expression is truly tied to genes, which means that the remaining 95% is within your control. And as you're working with your clients, knowing that is really, really important so that you can tell them, look, just because your mother died of breast cancer and just because your sister has rheumatoid arthritis or your other sister has Crohn's disease doesn't mean you have to get it. It means that you need to control more carefully for the environmental things that will cause that to happen. So there's a lot of things that influence your genetic expression. Right, nutrigenomics is the study of the overlap of all of these pieces. And you see the epigenetics is that star place where it all overlaps. Okay, so nutrition, huge, huge. Environment, huge. Lifestyle, your stress levels, huge. And the place where they overlap with your gene, that's your epigenetics. That's the expression. And the cool part about it, in addition to the epigenetic being your expression of your gene, if you're making modifications in a positive way or a negative way before you bear children and pass on those genes, you can pass on the epigenetics, those enhanced epigenetics or the deteriorated epigenetics to your kids. So just a little overview, these are some places that do genomic testing. When I first started working with nutrigenomics and genetic testing was back in, 2009. And the ones that had it, Genova Diagnostics had it, they've had it for a while. And they have different panels. So they have a detox panel and a methylation panel and a cardiac panel. And if you were to do all those panels together, it would cost somewhere in the $1,500 range. And then Dr. Amy Yasko, who works with autistic children, came out with a panel that's really geared towards a subset of the methylation pathways. And it's stuff that she finds very important and very helpful in helping autistic children come out of it. So Genova and Holistic Health, that's about a $400 test as well. Okay, so 400 versus 1500, but it's a small subset of it. Now, 23andMe came out with a test, and I first did 23andMe, and I ran it on my husband, and it was $400. And it was the same kind of thing that they give today, only actually less SNPs, and they ran it for $400. Well, about a year and a half ago, maybe a year ago, they reduced their price to $99. So you can get a full genetic profile that covers 900,000 SNPs for $99. The Holistic Health one covers about 30. The Genova Diagnostics one may cover about 60, 70, 80. I'm not sure the exact number. So 23andMe is a place to go to get this genetic testing done. Now, there's been a lot of stuff in the news, and it may be quite confusing about 23andMe being shut down by the FDA. The reason they were, like, they got their hands slapped was because they were not only doing the testing, but then they were interpreting the testing without the FDA approving how they were interpreting it. So they were coming up with, you have this much increased risk of Alzheimer's and this much cardiac disease and et cetera. And the FDA said, well, you don't have the basis, you know, you haven't gotten approved by us to do this, so therefore you can't do this. So they can still run the test. They're not making any interpretation or claims. It's just a lab test. So they can do that, but they cannot give you that interpretation. But the good news is, I never used that interpretation anyway. What we did was look at the raw data, and I'll show you in a little bit how you can look at the raw data and be able to extract some of the most important SNPs, and we'll talk about some of them, and then I'll give you resources to look at for where you can learn more, if this so chooses. This is very complex science, and you know how I love biochemical pathways, and it gets me buzzy, and I have to look things over and over. But it's fascinating, and it's very helpful. There's one other that I used, Pathway Fit. I've gotten their reports, and it's a very nice report. But again, they give you a little bit of the genes, but they mostly do an interpretation. Not sure if these guys got shut down or if they actually went and got the FDA approval before doing it. And then SpectraCell, which does a gene called MTHFR, which is the most popular one that people know about, that people hear about, but it's not the only one, and you'll see as we talk through, if you just look at MTHFR and treat a person based on their MTHFR results, and MTHFR is related to folate or folic acid, as we've always been taught to call it, and we'll talk about why that's not appropriate. But the MTHFR gene is only one, and SpectraCell tests two versions of it, but again, it's only one, and you don't get the big picture. So this is what the 23andMe site looks like, and I think I can actually bring it up. Let me bring it up for you, and I'll show you how to get the raw data if you've had yours done. So there's me for a second, and now I'm going to just open up the 23andMe site. All right, so you should see my 23andMe screen. So you see my 23andMe screen, okay? And what basically this is all, you know, the stuff that I can still see, you know, I'm 2.9% Neanderthal. And then it has all kinds of interpretations, which if you run it now, you're not going to get. But I ran it before the FDA told them they couldn't, so they allowed them to continue to show it to people who did. But what you're going to want to do is look over here where it has your name. You just want to go to where it says Browse Raw Data. And you can look at any genes that you want to, especially if you know what those genes are, if you know where to look, but you can actually look. So say I want to look for MTHFR. Yeah, so MTHFR, you can see there's a lot of things related to MTHFR, right? And this is like gobbledygook if you don't really know how to read these things. So it says that, you know, A or C, G, and I have a GG, so, you know, there's a lot of things that are kind of, it's hard to read in here. So, instead of doing it this way, what we do is go to this little tab that says download, And then it asks you for your password and your secret answer. And then it will download a file that has, it's a text file, very big, multi-megabyte text file that has all your genetic data in it. Once you've done that, you're going to go to a place called Ether. There's a couple of places you can go. GeneticGenie.org. You can see I've been there. And you're going to click on where it says methylation analysis. And then you browse that file you just saved, right? And if you don't remember how, it gives you instructions, right? You browse that, you upload, and it gives you a report. And the report, I have a picture of a report a little bit later in the presentation, so you see what that looks like. Now, this is the methylation pathway, so it's about 28 or so different SNPs. They have another one called detox profile. And the same thing, you just browse, you upload it, and then you get a report from that. And then you have another place you can go called mthfrsupport.com. And they run an even more elaborate report than the Genetic Genie, but they don't have as much of the, let's just say, the details as the methylation report. So the methylation report on Genetic Genie is a good thing to run because they give you a description a little bit of the SNPs, and then the MTHFR support doesn't, but they have a more detailed report. This is Dr. Lynn. So you can go, and there was a place that said report, and I don't see it, so they've rearranged it a bit, and I don't want to spend too much time, but you can play around, and you can always write to them and ask them. Viewing existing reports. Sharing your MTHFR stories. So there's a lot of really good information here as well. But let's see if it says it on the side. Categories. Uncategorized. You know, Y is only part of methylation. So great information if you want to dig deeper. Here we go. Under Sterling's apps, you go order view reports. So there you go. And you'll do the same sort of thing here as you would. I have a password and I log in, and then there's a way to, this is my view reports, how to download raw data, and then, so what I'm going to do is go back to Hangout so you can see that, and then I'm going to switch back to my presentation, so I'll get to wave to you in between because it'll open up, hi there, and then I'm going to switch back to my slides. So this is what I just showed you, the download raw data. So this is a report that you can get through Genetic Genie. And this report basically shows you what's called the methylation pathways. This is not all of them, but these are the ones that have been found to be clinically relevant and that play a big role in methylation. There are others that play a role, but this is the ones that Genetic Genie has chosen to give you. And so you can see that this person, I'll give you a little overview of how to read these reports. Anything green means that you have the normal variant. It's just the normal. It's what they call the wild type. And that would be a minus minus. So a plus means that you have a variant gene. And that the yellow would be you have one variant gene and one normal gene. And the red means you have both variant genes. So the degree of seriousness of the impairment, the genetic impairment, is related to whether you have the plus, 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 minus, or minus, minus version of it. Well, the minus, minus obviously is normal function. Some of these genes code for an increased rate of metabolism of this, and others for a shorter one. So let's just talk about what is this methylation thing? And it sounds like, whoa, whoa, it's this big fancy thing. It's basically the adding of a chemically structured, a methyl group, onto another compound or chemical. And a methyl group is just carbon and three hydrogens, CH3. So like water is H2O, a methyl group is CH3. And there's various substances in the body that are methyl donors. And those methyl donors basically carry a methyl group and then just pass it on to another chemical, which grabs it and passes it on. And so this passing around of methyl groups is what does a tremendous number of functions that I'm going to share with you on another slide, and we'll go through. Very important process in the body. Without methylation, we don't repair our DNA, we have problems with detoxing, we have problems with blood cell maturity. There's all sorts of things that it controls. So that's basically it. That's what the mystery is. It's a chemical group called CH3. So functions of methylation, and I put it up here so you can see it. The asterisk is just whatever the compound is that contains it, whether it's folate. If it's methylfolate, you've got basically the structure of folate with CH3 added to it versus a non-methylated folate does not have the CH3. Same thing with your vitamin B12. People say, oh yeah, I'm going to get a methylated vitamin B12 versus a adenosine or hydroxyl or cyano. So basically, the methyl is added on to the B12 molecule, and that makes it a methylcobalamin, methyl B12. When a hydroxyl group is added onto it, that's a hydroxyl, and an adenine, adenosine is an adenosine, and then cyano is actually a cyanide popped onto your B12, which doesn't sound real good, but yet it's a common form of B12 that's used. So what kind of functions? They have functions widespread throughout your body. They turn on and off genes. They're important for, is say you've got a methyl group attached to a gene, it will turn on or off the expression of that gene. It also, it's a process like phase 2 liver detoxification. One of those pathways is methylation. And it's a way to process the chemicals. Endogenously produced toxins are xenobiotics, external toxins that are coming in. It basically processes those and neutralizes those and helps them to be eliminated. Methylation also helps to build neurotransmitters, in particular norepinephrine, epinephrine, serotonin, and melatonin. It also metabolizes neurotransmitters, breaks them down like dopamine and epinephrine. Helps to process hormones. We kind of looked at that estrogen metabolism phase, and I'll show you in a little bit a picture that shows estrogen being processed by methylation. It helps you to build immune cells like T cells and NK cells. They synthesize DNA bases, and they also repair DNA. So it's really important for creating the bases, the nucleotides that go in, like adenine and guanine and cytosine and thymine. But it also is important for repairing the DNA when it gets damaged. So our DNA gets damaged all the time. There's lots of things that do. And as long as we have adequate methylation, we can repair that. Also helps you produce energy like CoQ10 and carnitine and creatinine and ATP. All those are formed from methylation. And then it processes the coating on the nerves, like myelination. So people with MS, you'd really want to be looking at, do they have a methylation issue? Do they have some of the genetics that would predispose them to it? And are they methylating properly? And then they can build and maintain cell membranes. So something like phosphatidylcholine, really important part of this whole methylation process. Now, to really fully understand these pathways will take way more time than I can give you here. But I want you to get an overview of how this can be clinically relevant. You don't have to get right into the minutiae of how all the pathways work to help people with this. Okay? If you want to be really getting in and manipulating things, then you either learn it or you refer somebody who knows it. And I just wanted to show you this picture, and this was from Seeking Health. Dr. Ben Lynch put this together. He's very proud of this, and we were very excited by this. It's very hard to see in a small format this way. I plan to print some of them out in the biggest paper I can get into my computer, but he's planning to do these as a poster, so stay tuned to his site. So this basically shows all the different pathways. When we think of methylation, we hear MTHFR, and MTHFR right in the middle, and I'll show you more close-up of it. So this is basically all the different pathways that are involved in this nutrigenomics. You're not going to learn all of these in one weekend even. There's a lot to it, but I want to give you the highlights and show you what's clinically relevant and get you excited if this is something you want to look into more. So the methylation players. This slide I got from Magdalene Casey, who's in my practitioner program. She's now a functional nutritionist. She got this from somewhere. It looks like it's an autism site. There's a link to it on this slide. It looks like www.autismnti.com. And that has this picture, which is really helpful to think of it functionally. You know, it's not just a matter of looking at the biochemistry of it, but what do they do? So these are all the different methylation players. You've got, the whole point is to create methyl groups, and SAMe is the donor that donates the methyl groups into the DNA repair and structure. So you're basically looking to get things through this methionine cycle to come out with the free methyl group that can be used. So in the middle is the organic green cycle, they're calling it, and that's where folate is important. And that's the MTHFR that everybody hears about. And that's a process that we'll look at in a little bit more detail. And then there's the feeling good, that's the hormones and the ATP creating energy, and then there's the urea waste management cycle. So it's just kind of thinking of it in terms of function so you don't get so bogged down in the chemistry and lose sight of what that is. Okay. So this is my version. This is Michaeline's version of the slide. So thank you, Michaeline, and I hope you're okay with me borrowing it, but I wanted to make sure that you got credit for it. So Michaeline actually put it together, and I really like what she did, because when you look at it just as chemical pathways, you get overwhelmed. It's just a bunch of little letters and arrows and all this stuff on the screen, but when you look at it in terms of the functions that are provided by methylation, when you provide the organic greens and you get plenty of folate, it provides these methyl groups that get donated and help with the conversion of something called homocysteine into SAMe eventually, which then donates methyl groups. So it's kind of cool. And then you've got the waste cycle, which ends up having you get rid of stuff. So there's a lot of good stuff here. So again, overview, just to give you a big, big view picture. So she put in the little versions of it, what's going on in those different places. So neurotransmitters, that's the feeling good cycle. The ATP is the energy cycle. Ammonia and high protein can create a lot of that. Infections, CBS pathway, that's all the waste management. So if you see something called CBS, that's basically the urea cycle. And then there's the detox, where the COMT, CBS, that breaks down the neurocatecholamines. And then the DNA repair happens. And the methyl gateway. So you're seeing all these things that are important. Glutathione gets produced down here. Ammonia gets moved out and eliminated. And this just breaks it down to very simple DNA. I talked about DNA repair and DNA methylation. And you've got your MTHFR, your organic green cycle, your folate cycle. And the spin-off of that will give you what you need for the DNA repair, the bases, the formation of the bases, etc. And then the SAMe part will donate those methyl groups that go for the methylation of the DNA.